is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's New Year's Eve, and I'm here, and you're here, and we are live. And there's actually a lot of stuff in the news beyond the airplane, Asia Air airplane that they're apparently they think maybe they found the plane. A few people and a little bit of baggage has floated up to the surface and been recovered. But the best guess that we're hearing from people over there is that pretty much everybody's probably, still in the plane at the bottom of the ocean, although it's only 100 feet deep. But they're having a storm there right now. So anyhow, that's everything you need to know. I mean, you could turn on your TV and watch, airplane porn for the next 4 hours if you want, but that's all you're going to hear because they've suspended the search because there's a storm going on. So anyhow, that's what's going on. I just as some things to toss out, right? Things to call if you want to call in and talk about. Like I said, it's a live show today, and this is talk radio. It's a cliche in this business, in radio and television, to do the best of for the previous year. What's the biggest story of 2014? What was the most important? What you will never see, though, on corporate media, or you will never hear, is what is the story that we really blew it on? What's the story that we really should have paid more attention to and we failed to? What is the story that should have gone viral, should have been widely publicized, everybody should know about, but everybody doesn't? I mean, was it the CIA document dump on Christmas Eve? Was it the caucus room conspiracy? Now, that's a six-year-old story, but it's every year it gets rebooted by Republicans in Congress. I put that at the top of that. The caucus room for conspiracy, for those of you who might just be tuning in, hang on just a second, let me grab my paper. For those of you who are just tuning in, the night that Barack Obama was sworn into office, or he was sworn in during the day, I was standing 60 feet from him when it happened, or maybe 60 yards from him when it happened. And that night, as he was and his wife and Ellen Ratner and I were dancing at the down at Union Station at the inaugural ball. This was 2009, January 2009, January 20th, 2009. In fact, the day that President Obama was first inaugurated as the first African American president in the history of the United States, a country that started out enslaving African Americans. As he was inaugurated, there was a group of men who were meeting in a private room in one of the fanciest and most expensive restaurants here in Washington, D.C. It's called the Caucus Room. Ironically, it's in the back end of the building that Louise and I used to live in when we lived in an apartment here in D.C. It's down on 9th Street and D, Northwest. And these 14 men decided to destroy the Obama presidency. Robert Draper writes about this in his book, When the Tea Party Came to Town, which you can find in paperback right now. It's in the introduction, in fact. You might even be able to read it online, but it's a great book to buy and read. And we have discussed this with Robert Draper on the air. And the people in that room, in that meeting, were Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Pete Sessions, Jeb Henseling, Pete Hoekstra, Dan Lundgren. These all from the House of Representatives. And then from the Senate, Jim DeMint, John Kyle, Tom Coburn, John Ensign, and Bob Corker. There was also Frank Luntz and Newt Gingrich. And this is what Robert Draper writes. He says, the senior GOP members plotted to bring Congress to a standstill regardless of how much it would hurt the American economy by pledging to obstruct and block President Obama on all legislation. Excuse me, that's not Robert Draper. That is, I think, Keep Him Honest, who made the original post on this thing over at Daily Kos on Friday, January 8th, 2012. It took us that long. It took us, basically 4 years to figure out that this had even happened. But after this meeting, now keep in mind, we were losing 750,000 jobs a month at that time. After that meeting, Pete Sessions told the National Journal that essentially they were going to become the Taliban, that they had learned from the Taliban how to disrupt other people's strategies. Kevin McCarthy, who is now the number two Republican in the House of Representatives, said, "We got to challenge them on every single bill, show united and unyielding opposition to the president's economic policies." Now, these are people, every single person in that room had voted yes to bail out Bear Stearn, yes on the 2008 stimulus for Bush Cheney, yes on Bush Cheney's bailing out AIG, yes on Bush Cheney's first TARP, yes in September 2008, yes on Bush Cheney's second TARP in October of 2008. This is where you and I, the taxpayers, bought toxic assets, in quotes, from the banks. Everybody in that room supported Bush Cheney's spending $4 trillion while cutting taxes for the top 1%. Keeping two wars off the budget, all these other things. But they plotted to destroy the Obama presidency, and that plot has continued. So I think that's probably the most underreported story of the decade. It's like, you know, just think about this for a minute. Had Democrats done this to a Republican president, Fox News would have been on it every day for the 6 years that it has been going on. And it would be like Benghazi or Fast and Furious. I mean, it would be one of those phrases where you just say caucus room conspiracy and everybody in the country knows what you're talking about. 6 years of a concerted, absolute, rigid attempt to hell with what it does to the United States to destroy this president. So I think that was one of the most underreported stories. Another one is Chuck Todd Tells the Truth. I predicted on this program that nobody would report on this. A few media outlets, I was surprised, even Huffington Post reported on it, but they didn't report on it as Chuck Todd accidentally told the truth. It's like nobody other than, you know, a post over in Democratic Underground, pretty much to the best of my knowledge, and a piece that I wrote that was on Truthout, you know, nobody was pointing out that Chuck Todd laid bare. Now, if people say, you know, why is Meet the Press's ratings in the tank? Because they never confront their politicians. You'd never learn anything from it. People come on and they tell lies, and whoever the host, it used to be David Gregory, now it's Chuck Todd, just nods and goes, yeah. I think this is why people love Tim Russert. Tim Russert, Shana was telling me, Tim Russert used to be a lawyer. He knew how to depose people. He basically did depositions. He asked questions. These guys don't. And Chuck Todd, in his moment of accidental candor, as Lewis Black was saying, I don't know how you can put up with the, you know, these Republicans coming on lying at you. He says, they come on and they go, blah, 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 and you just sit there and nod your head. And Chuck Todd says, well, yeah, because if I didn't, that would be the last show that they would do. And if they don't show up, I don't have a show. In fact, here's the actual clip. This is Chuck Todd just last Sunday on Meet the Press.
I don't know how you do it. I'd be barking at them. You just sit there and go, and you sit there.
We all sit there because we all know the first time we bark, it's the last time we do the show. Yeah. There's something sometimes where it's the last time you're ever, all of a sudden, nobody will come on your show, right? Yeah. There is that balance sometimes.
Nobody will come on your show if you bark at them. Well, here's a clue. Number one, make your show sufficiently important that they do come on your show even if you do bark at them. Or number two, figure out a way to do a show that doesn't require them. I mean, this is just not rocket science. Anyhow, Chuck Todd Tells the Truth. I think that's one of the most underreported stories of the year. So, you know, call in and tell us what you think are the most underreported stories of the year. Anything on climate change, in particular methane, underreported story. There's this huge methane, 2,500 square mile methane cloud in the southwest of the United States, down near the corner of New Mexico and Colorado and all that. There's the possible association, and we're going to be talking to the scientist who came up with this in the third hour of our program today, between glyphosate, product sold as Roundup, and autism. That possible? I think that's an underreported story. Exploding oil trains, right-wing shooters, voter suppression. It was a huge underreported story. So we'll be back with that and more.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, of course, your calls on all of this. We are live. It is New Year's Eve here on the Tom Hartman Program, 15 minutes past the hour. And welcome back. Some of the other possible underreported stories. Louise and I were brainstorming these this morning. Net neutrality. Net neutrality did not get treated well in the press. The military-industrial complex didn't, you know, no discussion of it at all. And yet it was arguably one of the greatest influences on American, you know, life and policy, our biggest foreign policy blunder in history, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Nobody to this day, because the President Obama campaigned on saying that Afghanistan was the, quote, good war. Nobody's really saying, oh, Afghanistan was a mistake. I'll say that. Afghanistan was a horrible mistake. We could have easily extracted Osama bin Laden from Afghanistan without bombing to smithereens, without blowing up, bombing back to the Stone Age an entire country. So, anyhow, Corky in Rochester, New York, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Corky, what's up? Happy New Year.
Hello, Tom. Yeah, I'm getting really scared. When I'm the smartest man in the room, this country's got a problem.
I think you underestimate yourself, Corky.
If nobody can understand why they had that meeting after the president was elected, they were the guardians of the lily white ruling class.
You're right.
And there was no way they were going to let this first black guy outshine any of the previous lily white presidents. Now, it was Theodore Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, tried to get health care reform through, right?
Yeah.
Then several other white
guys. Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt was the first guy to propose a national health care system.
Then you had the Clintons come in.
Right.
Then you had...
Actually, Harry Truman proposed it, too.
So here comes Barack Obama. He's smart enough to know.
Richard Nixon proposed it, Corky.
Yeah, yes. Okay, there's another lily white.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is Barack Obama was smart enough to know that you can't get it done by coming at the lily white brick wall. So what he had to do was weave his way through and fool them all. And that's just what he did, tomfoolery.
I don't think he fooled anybody. I think that bill was pretty transparent. Everybody says, oh, nobody read it. Yeah, congressional staff read it. The CBO scored it. There were no secrets in there. There were no big surprises.
Well, that's what I mean. He weaved his way through to get to those organizations. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I love the health plan.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that's why they had the meeting. They could not let this first black guy outshine the lily white.
It could be. And I'm willing to believe that maybe a couple of the people, because this was an entirely, a room full of white men, that some of them might have been motivated by racial animus, by racism.
All the
basically.
Biggest racists were there.
I don't think you can say that, Corky. I think that, we had Newt Gingrich on this program, and I confronted him about it, and he said, we're the opposition party. That's what you do. You oppose. I just think that there's...
It was all white. They were all white. What I'm saying is we've had an apartheid in this country since its beginning.
Yeah.
We finally started to get away from that, where the minority is ruling the majority. The minority of the whites. See, I'm not even a white man. I'm Irish. We come here. We were discriminated against.
Yeah, you're right.
We were pushed to the side.
Yeah, have you read that book, How the Irish Became White?
Yeah, the Lily Whites.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Corky, thanks for the call. Very thoughtful, as always. 20 minutes past the, and you are one of the smartest guys in the room. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. So the most underreported stories of the year, the military-industrial complex, net neutrality. You will hear nothing about net neutrality on NBC because it's owned by Comcast. And Comcast is running ads saying, we're the only network that is actually mandated to have net neutrality. Yeah, they're under court order, but it's going to expire in a few years. And trust me, we'll see what they do. Our biggest foreign policy blunder, our war, the voter suppression, I mentioned that. And then, of course, there are the stupider stories that never should have been reported. This is, on Fox so-called news yesterday. David Edwards writing about this over at data:text. I don't know which website this came from. Probably Raw Story. He says that the FDA is going to ban donut sprinkles, and he had some donuts with the sprinkles on them, little colored sprinkles. And he says, "Kiss these goodbye. You're never going to see these again." His actual quote was, say goodbye to your favorite sprinkled donut. They're getting rid of donuts like this. Doesn't the FDA have more important things to do than regulate sprinkles? Well, here's the real story. We banned trans fats last year. Trans fats are artificial chemicals that do not exist in nature that cause heart disease and cancer, particularly heart disease and strokes. They destroy the arteries and veins in the body. So the FDA banned them. And turns out sprinkles used to be made with trans fats. Now they're not. The company that makes them, as is the case of pretty much everything else that had trans fats in it, the manufacturers have just moved to a fat that's not a trans fat. It's just a regular saturated fat. Polar Corporation has already removed the trans fats from their line of sprinkles. But Fox says, you know, oh, my God, and it really this, you know, when they complain about the FDA regulating sprinkles, what they're doing is they're softening up their gullible audience, the Fox News gullible audience. They're softening them up for when they tell them that the EPA is guilty of overregulation. So people will say, well, yeah, if the FDA got rid of the sprinkles on my damn donut so I can't get a donut at Dunkin' Donuts anymore, which isn't true, but, you know, people think it is because that's what Fox News reported. The FDA would do something that's stupid. It must be that the EPA will do stuff that's stupid. And, of course, this is the big issue for the Koch brothers and a whole lot of other billionaires and big corporations. Koch Industries, apparently, according to Mike Papantonio yesterday on our TV show, 97 indictments against Koch Industries, criminal indictments for destroying ecosystems. So, of course, they're going to go after the regulators. But anyway, that's my list. What's on yours? Tom in Salinas, California. Hey, Tom, underreported story?
I think the underreported story this year is Eric Holder's not prosecuting the obvious criminals in the banking system.
Hmm. Or the details and nature of the crimes to which these guys have all pled guilty and paid fines. And part of the plea agreements were that the government would not tell the news media what crimes they committed.
Yes. And just a month or two back, we had that beautiful story with that woman who was an insider at Goldman Sachs saying, we've got all the evidence of direct criminal behavior. You know, why not prosecute this?
Right, right.
That's it. A good background for it, one of the better books I've read this year was Matt Taibbi's The Divide, about the two systems of justice that are emerging in America. I'd recommend it.
Hmm. Okay, I'll have to check that out. I've talked with him about it, but I think we have the book around here someplace, but I have not read it.
Yeah, it's a good book. Anyway, that was my thought for the underreported story this year.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for watching. Rick in Brownstone, Michigan, listening on SiriusXM. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you, too.
I'm very concerned about TPP. I used to work for the United Steelworkers Union, and I know what NAFTA and GATT and all the other trade agreements has done to our workers in this country.
Yeah.
And I don't think we can take another blow like this. And it's really sad that we don't. It's not only underreported. It's sadly reported.
It's bad. It's terribly reported. Yesterday on CNN, I was over at the TV studio, and I just had the TV on in the background while I was going through the rundown, and they had a guest on who was and the host, the CNN host said, does this speak poorly of the Malaysian and Indonesian air traffic controllers and airlines, and, you know, is that part of the world? You know, it's a still developing world, not the developed world. Does that mean that we should be concerned about this? And he was like, oh, no. The reason why we're pushing for the Trans-Pacific Partnership is because these are fully developed countries that have tremendous industrial capability, and we need to be making use of that. You know, I mean, he turned a discussion about an airplane crash into a naked sales pitch for TPP. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, here's another one of these guys who is, you know, a lobbyist, and CNN is putting him on the air as if he was an expert. And it's mind-boggling. By the way, Rick, Bernie Sanders in his Bernie Buzz update took on TPP yesterday, and he goes through the list And Rick, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. I'll just real quickly. This TPP will allow corporations to outsource even more jobs overseas. U.S. sovereignty will be undermined by giving corporations the right to challenge our laws before international tribunals. Wages, benefits, and collective bargaining will be threatened. Our ability to protect the environment will be undermined. Food safety standards will be threatened. Buy American laws will come to an end.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Prescription drug prices will increase. Wall Street will benefit at the expense of everyone else, and it will reward authoritarian regimes. Back with your calls live here on New Year's Eve. The bad, the very, very diffugently ugly, the good. Michelle Bachelet. The Chilean president is making good on her campaign promises and is doing her part to create a more progressive Chile. On Monday, she proposed new legislation that will strengthen the power of unions and make it easier for them to bargain for higher wages. Bachelet's proposal is aimed at reducing Chile's high level of inequality, which is the highest among OECD nations, and a vestige of the rule of Reagan-supported dictator Augusto Pinochet. Reaganomics, which the U.S. forced on Chile during Pinochet's rule, has failed wherever it's been tried. It now looks like President Bachelet is trying to undo the damage done by that failed ideology, so let's wish her luck and hope that she can inspire some lawmakers to take action against Reaganomics here in the United States. The bad. King County Metro. The Seattle, Washington area public transit organization is under fire after one of its bus drivers refused to seat two blind customers. Those two customers spoke to CNN about the incident in question. Take a look.
Oh my God, like, we were totally just discriminated against. We were made to feel really uncomfortable and unwelcome on a bus.
Blatant discrimination, and it was just really uncomfortable.
Cindy Bennett and Mike Mello can't believe that a bus driver told them they had to leave the bus because the Americans with Disabilities Act seating section was full.
We were so shocked. It was such an uncomfortable situation. And the word I've been using is demeaning because, you know, we were literally told we weren't welcome on the bus.
King County Metro has since apologized for how Bennett and Mello were treated, but let's be honest, this never should have happened in the first place. And the very, very ugly Stan Solomon. In a recent conversation on his radio program with gun activist Larry Pratt, conservative talk show host called on the police to kill anti-police brutality protesters. Check it out.
Here's my recommendation, and Larry will not condone this. The next time there's a die-in, make sure they're dead. The next time they block the road, run their asses over. I think it'll slow down. Larry, now tell me where I'm wrong.
Right. Tell us how you really feel, Stan. That is very, very ugly. Okay, it's New Year's Eve. We're doing a live show here on the 31st of December, the last day of 2014. Thank God this year is over. I don't know how to say it. Yeah. And, you know, there are good years and bad years. This wasn't a bad year in particular, but it was not the best of years. But I actually think that next year and the year after, I think the next 2 years are going to be astonishing. I think they're going to be pivotal in the future of this country. Mark in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Mark, you wanted to talk about what you thought was the most underreported news story of the year?
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hey, Mark.
Well, I really believe it's a misinformation thing, too. The post office pre-funds $5.5 billion a year for people that aren't even born yet.
Right.
So the way that they're spending it is, you know, the post office is failing. They're not going to make it, so they want to cut a day of delivery, and that's actually a death spiral for the post office. We want to expand our services, not cut them.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent point. It's not just underreported, it's malreported. It's wrongly reported and has been since 2006 when this thing was put into law, into legislation. Spot on, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much. That's a good one. Good talking with you. Misty in Glen Ellen, California. Hey, Misty.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
You know, I enjoyed the man from Ireland, Corky, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long Island. Yeah.
Yeah, I had something else to say, but after he talked, I got to thinking, why is it that other cultures in the world have more of a closer relationship with life and animals and nature? And it seems like those who came to America from the European side had this more aggressive take charge, take over, and destroy that we see today. And I'm concerned for our children and their children trying to clean up the mess like they did during the union strikes in the 30s and 40s and the 20s, whenever that was. So anyway, I just wanted to put that point out and say that the only way we're going to change that, from keep that from happening to our kids, is to step up and take care of it now.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I've often kind of scratched my head on this. I remember 15 years ago or more, Professor Jack Forbes, he's now passed on, but he was the archetypal Native American. He was in his 70s, tall, very handsome man, but just looked like long hair braided down his back, looked like somebody out of a picture from the 18th century of a Native American chief or something. And he's a professor of Native American Studies at the University of California, Davis, and he wrote a brilliant book called Columbus and Other Cannibals. And he said to me words to the effect of, "What's with you white people? Everywhere you go around the world, you destroy things." And I was like, whoa. He said, I don't know if it's genetic or if it's cultural, but there's a cultural mental illness here that seems to have come out of Europe and hit us, hit our people 400, 500 years ago here in North America. And y'all need to get it under control. So, Misty, I don't know the answer to the question, but...
I do. I think so. I think it's because when the people in Europe saw the kings and the noblemen being so wealthy and satisfied, that mentality came over with them, and it's just passed on, I think. And that's that may not be the true answer, but I think it's part of it. I think it's the same reason why the Aboriginal people still feel the way their grandsisters did.
Yeah.
And I think when we understand that we're still trying to reenact those old days when we could all have our kingdoms and, superior over others and people working for us for, nothing or no wages. And I think once we realize that, we can direct the change and say, we don't want to be like that.
That's profound. And it's profound, and I think you're right. Misty, have you read Daniel Quinn's book, Ishmael?
I have not.
It's a brilliant, it's a novel. It's fun reading. It's easy to read. It's a story about a young man who sees an ad in the newspaper that says, "Do you want to save the world? If so, come to this place." He goes to that place, and there is a talking gorilla there, or a telepathic gorilla or whatever. And this gorilla, whose name is Ishmael, then through the rest of the book proceeds to tell the hero of the story, or the young man who went, I'm forgetting his name, the history of the human race, essentially. And what he says is that before the agricultural revolution, which was 10,000 years ago, humans coexisted with gorillas and everybody else for 160,000 years peacefully and cooperatively and collaboratively. But what the agricultural revolution brought along was, because when we started planting crops rather than hunting and gathering, when we started planting the crops, when the crops came in, there would be an enormous abundance of food. And then as the year continued, there would be less and less food. And he said somebody figured out that if they took that, a large chunk of that food and locked it up, they became the world's first rich people. And it gave them power over others because those others had to come to them for the food. So the first guy who locked up the food began what we call our modern civilization. And to take this a step beyond that, I don't know if he points it out in Ishmael, but it just occurred to me from the conversation that you and I are having that in Europe, particularly in Northern Europe, the reality of the boom bust annual cycle of food is greatly exaggerated. I mean, in the summer, you can grow things, you can grow garden vegetables and stuff in Norway, but in the winter, you can't grow anything. Whereas in a more temperate climate, like down in Greece or Italy or down in North Africa or across Central Asia, you can grow things year-round. So it's a lot harder to lock up the food. It's a lot harder to build these basically kingdoms and empires out of control of natural resources there than it is in the northern parts of Europe. And so it would make a certain amount of sense that the northern European people would have evolved cultures – that had that in it, that just had that as a component to it, and that are reacting to it. I mean, if you look at the history of Northern Europe, the Vikings and the Swedes, the Scandinavians, the Norwegians and the Swedes were the most terrible people. I mean, you got all these castles along the coast of Ireland and England just to protect people from the marauders from 1,000 years ago from these people. They were horrible. They were wild and violent. And now they're the most peaceful people in Europe. They have awakened to their own insanity and fixed it. So I think there's hope for that. But what do you think of that theory?
I think that's wonderful. And the book is called Ishmael?
Yeah, Ishmael, like the biblical character, you know, only that's the name of the gorilla. And the author is Daniel Quinn. And then he wrote a sequel to it. There was such a, it came out about 15, 20 years ago, and there was such a huge reaction to it. I mean, it kind of got a cult following that he wrote a follow-up book to it called My Ishmael. And then he wrote another book called The Story of B. He's written several books, several other books too. But Daniel Quinn, it's absolutely brilliant, and it's one of the most thought-provoking books I've ever read in my entire life.
Well, I will look for that. And just one last thing before you let me go, Tom, I just want to thank you again, is that when, listen, I'll talk to you another time. I'll let somebody else talk. But I do thank you, and I'll look for that book.
Okay. We're just about out of time here, Misty. But thank you very much for the call, and thank you for your kind words, and I wish you the very best. A happy new year. And may 2015 treat us both well. Thanks, Misty.
It will, because we'll work for that.
There you go. You're absolutely right. Thank you, Misty. Great to hear from you. It's 15 minutes before the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls and your suggestions for the most underreported stories of the year. And anything else you want to talk about. I mean, it's anything goes holiday, but it's New Year's Eve, and everybody does. What's the biggest story? What's the stuff that we talked about? What's the stuff that nobody talked about and should have? What are the things people don't know about, and they should?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Is it the caucus room conspiracy? Is it Chuck Todd telling the truth? I think that's way up there at the top of the list. Climate change? Methane? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Heather watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Springfield, Illinois. Hey, Heather.
Well, hi, Tom. Peace.
Yeah, peace.
15.
Peace to you and Happy New Year.
Thank you, sir. My concern is what happened to our United States Marine who accidentally got off into the wrong lane, and, of course, he had all of his worldly goods, which included rifles, and they arrested him, put him in jail. Is he out? What's his name?
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
How did he get out?
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Oh, several months ago, a U.S. Marine was going to San Diego, and he got on the wrong. He wasn't able to turn around and come back to the U.S. They arrested him because he had weapons. He had rifles.
Oh, trying to go through.
Of course, he
trying to go through an airport.
No, at the border on from San Diego to Mexico, just on a outing, and for a long time I'd heard the story, but then all of a sudden I don't hear anything, and I even called my local recruiter, a Marine recruiter, and they didn't know either, and I thought, well, that's strange. What happened?
Yeah.
I'd like to mark a couple of divisions of Marines in there and say, we want him now, thank you, but, you know, that's a little strange. But
yeah, yeah.
I'm a Vietnam veteran. I just feel that we honor our veterans in any way, and he should come home if he's not.
I agree, Heather, and I would guess that the lack of coverage means that he has come home, but one never knows. I mean, that's the whole point of the underreported stories, I guess, is that we just don't know.
Right.
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. Maybe somebody will call in who does. Heather, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV, and Happy New Year. Patrick in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Patrick, you're on the air. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to mention that that Nobel Peace Prize, and the fact that he
you need to turn down your TV set because it'll distract you terribly, Patrick. There's about a half a minute delay. Whoops, Patrick just vanished. Maybe he's having a problem with his phone. Cliff in Canyon Country, California. Hey, Cliff, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Well, Happy New Year, Tom, to you and all your audience.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, Cliff.
The Enbridge oil pipeline is the pipeline that ruptured and spilled into the Kalamazoo River. So, you know, some people know about the Kalamazoo spill, but they don't know the origin. The Enbridge oil pipeline, it went into operation in 2009 with a capacity of 400,000 barrels a day from the North Dakota Bakken oil down to a terminal in Illinois. And they're planning, it's a Houston-owned company, and they're planning to triple the capacity to 1.2 million barrels a day, which would be more than the Keystone XL is proposed to carry.
Wow. I thought Kalamazoo River spill was carrying tar sands oil. I didn't think it was carrying the...
Yeah, well, the Enbridge pipeline is the one that ruptured, and it flowed like 30-some miles down, and then that's what is caused the Kalamazoo River to get polluted, and they're still cleaning it up.
Yeah. Well, that's a good addition to our list of underreported stories. Thank you, Cliff. By the way, for I'm forgetting her name now, the woman who called earlier asking about the Marine, Danielle just gave me this. Mexico freed U.S. Marine Reservist Sergeant Andrew Paul Tamarisi, who had been held in a prison here for 7 months. So he's free and he's home. Welcome back. It's the last day of 2014, December 31st, New Year's Eve. We are doing a live program here with you, trying to figure out what are the stories that maybe we should have paid more attention to on this program, although I like to think that we do a pretty good job of catching the stories that the corporate media doesn't. The best of the rest of the news is one of my favorite phrases. So what do you think were the most underreported stories of the year? Marvin in Skokie, Illinois. Hey, Marvin, thanks for listening to WCBT.
Hi,
what's up?
Thanks for taking my call, sure. Tom. I am calling about an underreported story. It's that the Democrats were defeated in the midterm election because they did not inspire the American public. And the solution is to have a proposal that by its very nature is fresh and offers a new model in a vital area, which is the shortage of jobs and has to do with the economy.
Yeah.
And Senator Bernie Sanders on your show a few weeks ago had his 12 Steps Forward for America.
Mm-hmm.
And after mentioning renewable energy and the need to repair our infrastructure, he brought up something that I had already blogged about on the Internet at philosophy forums because I'm a professor of ethics. And that thrilled me to hear confirmation from a senator.
Yeah.
And the proposal is that we need to increase job creation and back worker-owned businesses. And so I would like for you, on every occasion possible, to bring up the proposal that the government give a tax break to businesses that start up or that exist that are worker-owned.
Yeah, there are a number of states that do that now, and we need a lot more. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Alec came along with proposed model legislation to ban it. But you know, if capitalists can't make a fortune, then it shouldn't happen. But I'm with you, Marvin. And to your original point that the Democrats lost because they failed to inspire the American people, I think that is so true, and I think that's one of the most underreported stories of the year, too, because the Democrats who ran on basically a Bernie Sanders platform all won, or at least with one exception. They all won, whereas the Democrats who ran trying to be single-issue candidates, Mark Udall in Colorado talking about abortion, or trying to be, I'm not the Republican, or I'm kind of like the Republican, you know, like Alison Lundgren Grimes in Kentucky. I don't agree with President Obama. But I'm not Mitch McConnell, right? They lost. And I think that should tell us the whole story. Marvin, thank you for the call. Well said. Ben in Miami, Florida. Hey, Ben, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. I thought a big unreported story was the total failure of Sam Brownback's Reaganomic experiment in Kansas.
Oh, yeah. You want to recap that for our listeners, or shall I?
Yeah. When he got elected back in 2010, he decided to go full-on Reaganomics, cutting taxes to the top percent.
Including the Koch brothers who live there.
The Koch brothers do live there, yes.
Yeah.
And their fiscal, their budgets for the last 3 years, they've been in massive deficits. They haven't been able to fund anything, and the economy is doing much worse there than the rest of the country.
Right.
It's been a total failure.
Yeah, what's the matter with Kansas, it turns out, is, to paraphrase Thomas Frank's book title, it turns out what's the matter with Kansas is Sam Brownback and his belief in this fantasy religion called Reaganomics, supply-side economics, trickle-down economics, whatever you want to call it. You're right, Ben. I think that's one of the most underreported stories of the year. Thank you very much for the call on that. Kirk in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Kirk. You have a proposal?
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call, and Happy New Year's to you.
Thank you. You too.
Listen, one of my issues is that America, we are one of the most illiterate group of people I've ever seen. And by that, I mean we can read, but we choose not to read. We talk about people in a third world nation because they cannot read, and they'll take everything that they hear as gospel, even though it is wrong. So my question is, what's wrong with America? And I think one of the things that needs to be talked about more, not just here in America, but around the world, is what's going on at the top. The group called the Bilderberg Group, who meets, if we're talking about Queen Nora, Queen Elizabeth, we're talking about the so-called kings and queens of this world.
Yeah.
Who are meeting, and we have people from our country that's meeting and should not be meeting because it's against the Constitution.
Well, wait a second here, Kirk. The Bilderberger Group is kind of a social club for rich and powerful people, and they get together once a year at some fancy resort and toast each other and have erudite conversations. I may be wrong, but I've read the literature and the websites and things of people who think that these guys are the secret power behind the world, and Bilderberger sounds vaguely Jewish, and that plays into the anti-Semitism that's out there as well. But as far as I can tell, it's really just, a social club for rich people.
Do we ever see when they are meeting, where there is no mention of, when they met here in America, I think it was in 2006.
Yeah.
Where I was in a bookstore, and I knew what was going on. I think they met outside of Virginia somewhere, but there was no mention of this group nowhere.
Yeah, but the Koch brothers have these conventions twice a year in the United States of billionaires, and they invite Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia, or have for several years in a row. And, they don't get much publicity in the mainstream media anyway at the time. You could argue that that is actually an attempt to influence politics. I don't know. I'm not with you on the Bilderbergers, Kirk, but I think that you're right on illiteracy here. Yep.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends. Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live on Christmas, or excuse me, on New Year's Eve. And an hour from now, Dr. Stephanie Seneff is going to be with us, senior research scientist at MIT, to talk about glyphosate and autism. This is a spooky story, which I think is one of the more underreported stories of the year. We're still taking nominations for the most underreported story of the year. Just a few quick headlines to share with you, and as I'm popping around the news, just to share with you things that you're keeping up on. The New York Times has doubled down on their criticism of the New York Police Department. Yesterday, they ran an op-ed from the editorial board. This is the newspaper itself. Yesterday, they ran an editorial saying that when the police officers turned their backs on the mayor, that they were being disrespectful, and they were also turning their backs on the family of the slain officer, and this was just wrong. And today, they're running another op-ed pointing out that the police have now in New York slowed down. They're not giving tickets. They're not arresting people for small crimes and things like that, which might be just a fine thing. Who knows? The crime rate is actually down. Reported crimes are down right now. But anyhow, basically what they said is, and you can see this in the headlines over at Democratic Underground, New York Times to New York Police Department. Number one, don't violate the Constitution. Number two, don't kill unarmed people. Number three, do your jobs. I would write that as do your damn job. It's like, God, it's like enough of this. Stop behaving like children. It's, you know, because basically what the cops are saying to de Blasio is, hey, it'd be a shame if something happened to your city. You know, nice looking town you got here. But really? I mean, it is demonstrating that what the police of New York want is not respect. It's fear. Fealty. They want to be bowed down to. They're behaving like bullies. And I think this is just wrong. Another story over at DU, not The Onion. Monsanto tries it. This is not, in other words, not from the joke website. Monsanto has tried to patent a natural tomato. There's a natural tomato that's naturally resistant to a particular type of fungus, grows in Europe, and I believe, as I recall, anyway, and Monsanto has tried to patent it, and at least one country has said, no, we're not going to recognize that patent. So I thought that was an interesting story. There are, what happened to my raw story link? I had a bunch of stories up here that I thought were a hoot. Here we go. Fox pundits are defending Scalise, the guy who the Republican, number four Republican in the House of Representatives, who gave a speech to white supremacists, and their defense. And it's so funny. I think they all share the same talking points, because this is exactly what came up last night on our TV show when I had two conservatives on. And I said, what about this guy talking to these white supremacists? And their response was, well, Obama talked to Bill Ayers. Really? Bill Ayers represents a movement to destroy an entire race of people? I didn't know that. Somehow I missed that. And that was like 10, 15 years ago. Well, I guess this was in 2002. This was some time ago, too. But, this is just this false equivalence. It's like they're always coming up with just, weird stuff to throw at us. Over on MediaMatters.org, 975 Ebola segments were aired on the evening news broadcasts and cable news before the midterm elections. Since the elections, 975 before the election, be afraid of Ebola. Since the midterm election, 49 segments in all the networks. That's pretty astonishing. I just don't know how to say that other than just that's pretty astonishing. Over at Think Progress, the Center for American Progress's blog, President Obama has dropped a judicial nominee, Michael Boggs, who says that he's a right-wing fundamentalist Christian. Obama had added him into a collection of nominees to satisfy Republicans who were filibustering his attempts to get people through the process. And then they filibustered this guy, too, because he was part of, he was in there with some Democrats. So the president has now said, screw it. We'll find somebody else. That's great. And the governor of Maryland, Governor O'Malley, who's on his way out, the Democrat. This state 2 years ago ended the death penalty, but there's still a bunch of people on death row in Maryland. He just commuted all their sentences. So there will be no more executions in Maryland. And that's a marvelous thing. Oh, and the CDC is reporting, by the way, we are right now officially in a flu epidemic nationwide. Louise, my wife, has been home in bed for the last 3 days. Today, in fact, I called her just before we went on the air, and she had just gotten up and taken a shower and was getting around the house or around the boat or whatever. And for the first time in 3 days, we came back from Portland, and she was really whacked. So, and it sure looked like flu to me, you know, sore muscles and feeling like crud and a fever of 101 and all the normal stuff. But she's feeling a lot better now. But the point is that there's a flu going around that is pretty extensive. In Idaho, a woman went to her for Christmas. Her husband gave her a handgun. Isn't that nice? Turns out that she was a nuclear research scientist, by the way. She takes her kids or her niece, her son and her nieces and nephews to the Walmart in Hayden, Idaho. So because they had some holiday gift cards, so they were going to spend them. And she was carrying this gun in her purse. Her 2-year-old pulled it out and shot her dead with it. Brilliant. Not brilliant for the 2-year-old. I mean, it's just giving people guns for Christmas is like so not the spirit of Christmas. It's almost hard to come up with how to describe, but anyway. And hunters in Utah killed a wolf who might have been the famous Grand Canyon wanderer Echo. These are some headlines from Raw Story. Amazing. And Fox affiliate fires reporter and cameraman who deceptively edited video of police brutality protesters. That hasn't stopped the people from saying that the people were saying we want dead cops. That's not what they were saying. This Fox affiliate edited it to sound like that's what they were saying, and the people who did that have been fired. Well, that's I suppose good news. So anyhow, just a few things there. I'll continue to give you little bits and pieces as we go through the day, but. Let's pick up your calls. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, thanks for calling. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too, Tom. Thanks. First, I want to point out that virtually all Democrats support most of Bernie Sanders' agenda, especially infrastructure spending and raising the minimum wage, which would create millions more jobs. But the media won't let them get their message out. And so I have an underreported story. The entire media is now controlled by Republican billionaires, even the New York Times and the Washington Post. The Washington Post is now owned by Jeff Bezos, who's the Amazon sweatshop king.
Right.
And the New York Times has also been bought by billionaires, which is why they're moving more to the right, and we really don't have any moderate media anymore.
Wow. And forget about left-wing media. I mean, there is no left-wing mainstream media in the United States. Even MSNBC is, it's hardcore right wing in the morning. It's lock block and stuff at night. You've got, three or four shows that are somewhat progressive, but they're prevented from discussing things like net neutrality and international trade and the stupidity of it. But yeah, I'm with you. I think everybody agrees with Bernie, all Democrats anyway, and a lot of Republicans, frankly. Agree with Bernie Sanders on all the issues, and none of it is getting discussed in the media. I'm with you, Paul. I think that's a great suggestion for the most underreported story of the year. Thank you very much. It's 15 minutes past the hour. We're taking your nominations for the most underreported story of the year. We'll be back with more right after this. It's the 31st of December, New Year's Eve, here on the Tom Hartman Program, where we're doing a live program. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with your calls right after this. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Boy, if you can find that, Shane, for me, I would love to see it. That sounds fascinating. Shane was just telling me that Eric Bollard, the guy who runs Media Matters, made the point the other day that Bernie Sanders and Marco Rubio both have the same polling levels as potential presidential candidates. And the media is constantly reporting on Marco Rubio. but how often do they report on Bernie Sanders? Tell me there's not a right-wing bias in the American media. I mean, it's not only there, it's conspicuously there. Stanley watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Tyler, Texas. Hey, Stanley, you've got a nomination for underreported story?
Yes, sir. First, I'd like to wish a Happy New Year to you, your family, and the fine people who work with you.
Thank you. And back at you, Stanley, the same for you and your family and your friends.
Thank you very much. Okay, my nomination is NSA spying.
You think that's underreported?
Oh, in the main media?
Yeah.
As to the extent that it needs to be, I think it definitely is underreported.
Yeah, in that context, I would agree with you. It's a huge story, and it's dropped off the radar screen. It only bubbles up every now and then when there's a new Snowden revelation, and then it fades away. And, yeah, I think that's a good one.
Right. Yeah. One day, one page, you know.
Yeah.
They give it. And, you know, this is one of the most dangerous threats to our liberty. It's Shades of 1984 and another book. I can't remember the author, but It Can't Happen Here.
Yeah, that was Sinclair Lewis, wasn't it? Or was it Upton Sinclair?
Lewis.
It was one or the other. I mix them up. Upton Sinclair? No, I think it's Sinclair Lewis. I'm pretty sure. In any case, It Can't Happen Here. It was written back in the 20s. And what was the guy's name? Biff? No, something. Anyway,
I don't remember the protagonist, but it's you know, it was very similar to what they wanted to do with the general in
Smedley Butler, in the 30s.
Yes, Smedley Butler.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then also, I don't know if this has been brought up, but the Keystone Pipeline, the southern half of it is nearly completed.
Yeah.
It's been done by, you know, eminent domain, taking people's property here in Texas.
Yep.
And it has increased the price of gasoline already in Oklahoma, where it used to stop. I mean, there's a number of pipelines carrying tar sands oil down to into Oklahoma, into the mid America.
Right, where they used to refine it and sell it in the United States. If Keystone XL is completed, then all that oil is going to go down to the Gulf Coast, where it'll be refined and sold to China, and it won't be sold in the United States. In fact, the number one export product from the United States last year was diesel fuel and gasoline, refined petroleum.
Right.
And
it has already increased the price of gasoline in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah. It does.
I drive up there frequently, and I've seen the price of gasoline go up since I started working on that.
Huh.
That part of it.
Be interesting to know if the refinery capacity in that area has decreased as a consequence of that, or if that's just a coincidence. Stanley, thank you for the call. That's fascinating stuff and a great suggestion. I'm with you. The NSA spine needs a lot more press than it's got, and we need a new Frank Church committee, although Frank Church is no longer with us. Thank you, Stanley. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, here's another list that's a little less than the normal television cliches. GQ has done a America's 20 Craziest Politicians, and all but two of them are Republicans, and the two Democrats that are on here, one is, where is it? Republican, Rand Paul, Michael Grimm, Gordon Klingenschmidt, Jody Heiss, Hank Johnson, a Democrat from Georgia. He said all these military personnel on Guam was going to tip over the island. Yeah, you know, he made a joke. He's, by the way, a Buddhist. He's one of two Buddhists in Congress. That's fascinating. But, so he gets on for a joke. All these Republicans are on, though, for things, and Sheila Jackson Lee, they're just basically picking on her, saying that she's got a bad personality. She doesn't, her staff doesn't like her, something like that. I mean, that, really? But with the Republicans, you're talking about policy stuff that is crazy. So then Fox News comes out and says, hey, wait a minute, this isn't fair. How come out of the 20 craziest politicians in America, 18 of them are Republicans? Well, Jim just says, welcome to reality. Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, underreported stories?
Yes, Tom. I have a couple of them. The first one is Fukushima is basically a total blackout in the United States about what's going on with all of those millions of gallons of radioactive water being dumped into the Pacific Ocean every single day.
Right, and how much of it is reaching our shores and our food supply?
And how much of it is reaching our shores? The second thing is the misinformation and the disinformation about what's really going on the ground over in Ukraine, and specifically Russia's supposed culpability in this situation.
Yeah.
The Russia's hand was forced to take Crimea. They had no intentions on taking Crimea. They were forced by the coup d'etat that occurred in Ukraine, and it's basically between the U.S. government and between the mainstream media, they have the whole country brainwashed about who's really at fault in Ukraine. For instance, the Ukrainians are the ones who shot that jetliner down, the MH, Malaysian Airlines jetliner, but you're not going to get the truth from anybody over here unless you look for it for yourself.
Yeah. I can't say that I know who shot down that Malaysian Airlines plane. I think both theories that it was done by a Ukrainian fighter jet, which I think the Russians are more or less asserting, or that it was shot down by the rebels on the ground, you know, using Russian weaponry, are both credible. But Tom,
I'll tell you how you can find out real simple.
Okay.
You can find out there was a Spanish air traffic controller who was that day, and he was tweeting out in real time when the plane came down, and I think he was at Kiev Airport, and as soon as they shot the plane down, the military came into the airport, and they were threatening him and everything. He was lucky to make it out of there with his life.
Wow.
But he was tweeting in real time what happened, and he said point blank, Ukrainians shot the jet down. They're trying to make it look like the Russians did it. Plus, there's a whole bunch of more evidence besides that you can find. But
yeah, no, I've seen it, Wayne. I've seen it. What I'm saying is that I don't consider myself enough of an expert to independently assert that. But it's entirely conceivable in my mind. I think the one thing, though, that I think doesn't require any expertise and we are agreeing on is that there was a coup d'etat in Ukraine promoted by the United States, and traditionally we don't support those kind of things, or at least we're not supposed to, and we recognized an illegitimate government, and that illegitimate, and which was replacing an elected government, which was saying, no, we don't want to join NATO, and the illegitimate government is now saying, yes, we do want to join NATO, or at least we'll get into a defense agreement with NATO, which is a complete violation of the agreement that Gorbachev had with George Herbert Walker Bush, and which puts Putin in the position of if he's got a NATO country on his borders, he's basically in a similar position to John Kennedy in 1962 with Russian missiles in Cuba.
Exactly.
And do you allow that?
Russia's not going to allow Ukraine to join NATO.
Yeah.
Because that is pushing for World War III.
I agree. It concerns me tremendously. It concerns me tremendously. And I think that's that's not so much an underreported story as a malreported story. It has been reported inaccurately and badly at least in the American press. I think, you know, the BBC has done a fairly even-handed job. I listen to BBC every night to put myself to sleep. And Deutsche Welle, the German news, has done a very balanced job, or at least had up until a few months ago, of reporting on that. But keep in mind, I mean, it was Angela Merkel who was trying to negotiate a balance between President Putin and President Obama. So, you know, I don't know. But I think you're right, Wayne. I think you're right. Good ones.
Misinformation and disinformation, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
So if people knew what the real deal was, they would know that we have no business over in Ukraine doing what we're doing.
Well, let me add a hugely underreported piece to that, and I reported this on this program. Reuters did a story back a few years back that you can find it still on the internet, about how one of the American oil companies, I think it was Chevron, cut a $10 billion deal with the Ukrainian government to frack for oil in Ukraine. And I see that as the predecessor to a lot of these other problems. I mean, you know, it's the old joke, if all they grew in Iraq was Brussels sprouts, we never would have invaded. Well, if Ukraine didn't have billions of dollars worth of oil under its ground because they've got a lot of Marcellus shale there, or whatever the shale is that you can frack, if they didn't have all that oil and natural gas, I don't think that we would have any interest in it. Wayne, thank you for the call. You're always so insightful on these issues. Great to hear from you. And I wish you the very happiest of the new year, the very best of the new year to you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
It's New Year's Eve here on the Tom Hartman Program, December 31st. What do you think is the most underreported or malreported, badly reported story of the year? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, hey, time for our Borowitz Alert for the day. News from Andy Borowitz. Borowitz Alert, AndyBorowitz.com, I think is the website. House Majority Whip calls for clearer labeling of white supremacists is the headline. House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, Republican from Louisiana, said on Tuesday that he would introduce a new bill requiring clearer labeling of white supremacists. The White Supremacist Labeling Act of 2015 would require white supremacists to wear 4x6-inch name tags, clearly designating them as members of an official hate group. Right now, Scalise said, it's impossible to tell the difference between neo-Nazis and collectors of World War II memorabilia. The Louisiana congressman said that proper labeling for white supremacists should make it easier for lawmakers, you know, like him, to know what kind of organizations they're addressing in the future. Sometimes, Scalise said, it's hard to see through all that smoke from the burning crosses. Right. Okay. Dean Radin. R-A-D-I-N is the guy who wrote the book Entangled Minds. Sue had asked me about that yesterday, and I didn't get back to her. So just FYI, apropos of nothing right now, but just catching up. Anyhow, Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russell, what's on your mind today?
Hey, before we get to my topic, we also got now Michael Steele doing the Chris Matthews show.
I heard that last night. I didn't see it, but I had dinner with some friends who were in town last night, and they said that they had watched Hardball, and Michael Steele was the host, and my friend was just scratching her head, going, "What's this?" You know, I didn't see it, so I can't comment on that.
So you can kiss that station goodbye. I got two things. First, the economy. That guy kind of stole my thunder. Now the Republicans, you can't find one that's out there saying it's their economy. They did it. It's their economy. If it wasn't for their hardliner and sequester, that we'd be in the toilet. And second, Rand Paul, he either runs for president and gives up the Senate, or he stays as a senator and he can't run for president. That's in the Kentucky Constitution.
Right, although he's got a bunch of Republicans in Kentucky trying to change that, but they've got a Democratic governor who's...
But he's also got a Democratic House.
That's right. The House flipped Democratic, too, didn't it?
He's either he runs for one and he gives up the other, but I don't think he's giving up his Senate seat.
I don't think so either. And I don't think I don't think he's a serious or viable candidate for president. The Republican establishment doesn't like him. The Republican base is ambivalent about him, basically just libertarians like him. And most of them, a lot of them are low information voters. They're not participating in elections anyway. I don't think he has a chance.
About that, Republicans taking all the credit now. I ain't seen a station. They had their mugs out there in Norquist. If it wasn't for sequester and stopping this tyrant that we got as a president, we'd be in the toilet. We did all this great things. We're the ones that stood behind the auto loan and the stimulant. Now they're coming out and they want to take credit for that.
Yeah, you're right. Russell, thank you. That's a very good one. And thanks for listening to WCPT. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Pretty good. I got that flu, too.
Oh, anyway, no. Happy New Year, by the way.
Before my main subject, where you say the Dems have learned, they've learned nothing. They're sending out the same emails now about fundraising, scaring everybody, and just saying we need money. They don't see what they've done.
I know.
Anyway, the main subject, lions, tigers, and bears, sharks, butterflies, bacteria, and bees. That's the story of the millennium right now, because right now the effects of extinction are forever, and we're not reporting on almost any of it.
You're right.
And it's like right now we found in the past two decades a lot of populations of wildlife have dropped by 90%, which is a 95% drop over the past couple hundred years. It's like we've got tigers, six subspecies, there are less than 500 tigers left in each of those subspecies. One species of rhino went extinct the last decade. White rhino, we only have five left, and they're all in captivity. Javan rhino, there are only a couple dozen left. Elephants will be extinct in the wild in 6 years, probably.
Wow.
Wolves, they were slaughtering them because the Obama administration and Salazar here in the U.S. Lions in West Africa may be extinct. Sharks, there is, and tuna is actually one of the biggest underreported stories. There may be some extinct species of tuna now, or functionally extinct.
Wow.
But then all apes are endangered, chimps, orangutans, gorillas. And then the other one that is totally ignored is microbial extinction, you know, such as in our bodies and the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And the last two that we're getting some publicity, but like bees, of course, but monarch butterflies.
Yeah. They're talking about putting them on the endangered species list.
They should be. I mean, they've already dropped by 90% in like a decade.
Yeah.
And they all gather at one spot in Mexico. So it's like they're one of the most endangered species in the world.
Yeah. Is that habitat loss in Mexico, or is that poison on the crops and the fields in North America where they come to eat and you know, lay their eggs and have, you know,
there are very,
pupate and all
there
that?
There are various theories. One of the big things may be a loss of essentially like hedgerows, that we have just farmland. We don't have any native crops. And the thing is, monarchs depend on milkweed.
Right.
And so there's no milkweed growing by the fields. Now, it could be the lack of milkweed. It could be the Monsanto stuff, you know, the things they're putting out there. And the thing is, monarchs need migratory routes in order to get back to Mexico.
Right.
And so a lot of us, like myself, we're planting milkweed in our gardens, but we need it in Nebraska. We need it in South Dakota, North Dakota, et cetera. We need it everywhere.
Right.
So we're not
there's no longer hedgerows. You mean there's no longer like weedy spaces between fields because we've just gotten so efficient at farming that we're using every square inch?
Yes.
Wow.
Drive across northern Texas, drive across the panhandle in Texas, and try to find a square inch of land that has not been altered by man.
Wow.
You can drive hundreds of miles, and every square inch has been altered by us, other than maybe the bottom of the creeks.
Yeah. Yeah, and even the bottom of the creeks are radically altered by us because all this, so much of the water that we're pouring back into the water systems of our country, even when it's purified, are laced with pharmaceutical residue.
Yeah.
I mean,
which also brings up another thing that we haven't reported on, the incredible idea that water should be a sewer. Why do we throw anything in water?
Right, right. And all, the other underreported thing I'd say is the very high levels of hormones and SSRI drugs that can be found in municipal water supplies all around the United States when they're pulling them out of rivers that are getting them from cities upstream where, you know, the municipalities are processing their sewage and dumping the water containing these pharmaceutical residues. You know, people take the pharmaceuticals and their bodies don't entirely metabolize them and then they pee the stuff out and it goes, you know, through the whole cycle and back down into the river. And this is altering, I mean, it's causing fish to be born that are gender, you know, dysfunctional or lus and, you know, bug eyes and three eyes and four legs, six legs and all kinds of strange things. Yeah.
And the answer to that is composting toilets. It's as simple as that. I go to places like in Mexico. They immediately separate the liquid from the solids. The solids are then used for fertilizer. It doesn't smell, and the liquid is dried.
Yeah.
Real easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent suggestion. Excellent suggestion. Jeff, thank you, and Happy New Year you and yours. Great to hear from you.
Tom. Thanks for everything you've done.
My pleasure. Vincent in Spring City, Tennessee. Hey, Vincent.
Hello there, Tom.
What's up?
I was calling to ask you a question. How do we go back to the paper ballot?
Well, I think that you have to have a certain minimum threshold of outrage and indignation on the part of voters. And that has not been present. And I blame the political parties for this, the Democratic Party in particular, that when there is evidence of election tampering and election theft, principally by Republicans, if you look at what happened in Ohio in 2004, for example, where Ken Blackwell had the tabulation of the vote, the statewide vote, run through computer servers in Kentucky or Tennessee that were run by what was Steve's last name? That guy ended up dying in the plane crash. He was, you know, Karl Rove's buddy. And these are the same servers that had the G.W. Bush website and provided all the secure email for the White House, so that the 5 million emails that vanished and we never will see, they'll never make their way into the Bush library. I mean, those kind of stories got no traction whatsoever because the Democrats wouldn't complain about them, because the consultants to the Democrats, and I've sat in the room and listened to these people say this, are saying, don't talk about election fraud. We're not talking about voter fraud here. We're not talking about the stuff that Republicans are hysterical about, but election fraud. Don't talk about election fraud. Don't talk about electronic voting machines not working, tabulators being able to be manipulated, systems being able to be hacked. Don't talk about that, because it'll cause people to be cynical and they won't go to vote. And I'm saying people are already cynical. And you should be talking about that, because we need to fix this problem, this red shift problem that we've had since 1998. And they got really, really bad during the 8 years of the Bush presidency. It seems to be cleaning itself up somewhat, but still, this redshift problem is a problem.
Absolutely. And I am 15, and I will be a voter very soon. So I thought the paper ballot would be much better, so that way neither party could flip the vote electronically.
Yep. Good on you, Vincent. It's great to hear from a young activist, and glad to know that you're out there doing it. Bernie Sanders is on the record saying we should just go back to paper ballots.
I also think that would be the best thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a lot of others. I mean, Ireland tried electronic voting machines for one election cycle, and then they literally sold them for scrap metal. That's what they thought of it. Canada tried them, and I believe they abandoned them once. I think that they're still voting on paper. Probably one of our Canadian listeners will let us know. But I'm with you. Paper ballots. Vincent, thank you for the call, and Happy New Year. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Your nominations for the most underreported stories of the year. And we're going to check in with Bob Naber, the Talk Radio News Service, for all the news of the day in a few minutes. Welcome back. Your nominations for the most underreported stories of the year. Tony, watching Free Speech TV in Leicester, Mass. Am I saying that right, Tony?
Leicester,
Mass. That's right. It's spelled like Leicester, right?
Leicester.
But that's
Leicester.
Yeah,
like the British, in England, that's Leicester, England.
Okay.
They're the only ones that know how to pronounce it correctly, I guess.
I guess. I certainly didn't. Anyhow, and I'm pretty sure I've been there. Tony, what's your nomination?
Happy New Year, first of all.
Thank you. Back at you.
Well, I think the most underreported story of the year is the story of the unreported, misreported, and underreported stories that we are now talking about, that are not talked about on the mainstream media.
Right. It's that there is basically a blackout on things like TPP, free trade,
Right. I think if these stories in your show today we're talking about were to either go viral in the mainstream or were reported in the first place, we could change this country around faster than anything else.
Yeah.
Or perhaps we wouldn't be in such dire need of change in the first place.
Yeah, I think you're right. If as many Americans immediately knew about the caucus room conspiracy, or that Chuck Todd told the truth, Chuck Todd's faux pas on Meet the Press last weekend, where he said, you know, if I were to bark at politicians, they would not come back on the show, and then I wouldn't have a show. That, you know, the right wing took a comment made by one of the guys who was a consultant to the who came up with Obamacare, where he said, we had to fool people or something like that. And they turned that into an iconic moment. I mean, everybody who watches Fox, everybody who listens to right-wing hate radio, they all know this, that this guy, Gruber, they call it Grubergate, Steve Gruber, made this inappropriate comment, and nobody who worked with him, you know, agrees with him, and or even say, but and he's kind of backed away from it. But nobody knows that Chuck Todd said this astonishing thing on Meet the Press last weekend, for example. You know, if there was a left-wing equivalent of Fox News, everybody in America would know it, but there isn't. I mean, there's just a
correct.
You know, there's just a few.
And even with Chuck, everyone Chuck Todd did say that. I'm sure that a lot of casual viewers probably wouldn't know what he was talking about in the first place.
That's correct. I you are absolutely right. They don't understand the dynamic of television and politics and all that kind of thing. And
kids growing up today, young people today, are watching the cable stations, and they don't know what it used to be like before Reagan destroyed the fairness doctrine in '87, and they just think what's on TV today is just the norm.
Yeah.
That's a big story right there that people should be aware of. Yeah. But we got to change the media before anything. I mean, I think that's the most important change we can do in this country is to fix the media first.
Yeah, I would agree. And the way to do that is step one, start enforcing the Sherman Act. Number two, bring back ownership rules that the FCC had to break up these big media monopolies. And step three is we need to do with radio what has been done with television and the movie theaters, which is making the verticalization of the industry illegal. Tony, thank you for the call. I'm with you. We'll be back 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. Before the hour, the program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person, or Hobby Lobby for that matter? And we dare to answer, no, not a chance. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Goats for the Old, goat.com, and free-don.org to find out what's up in the world. Bob Ney is on the line with us, the author of Sideswiped. Hey, Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for working on New Year's Eve.
Sure. Couldn't think of any better place to be. They will tell you that they are people, according to Citizens United Supreme Court. They can give money.
I know. So they're people. I know. It's a tragedy.
Human beings.
Yeah.
Speaking of money, the new year is going to start well over for 3 million workers. They're going to get a raise. Employers in 21 states and the District of Columbia will hike their minimum wage on January the 1st, starting tonight at midnight.
That's great.
And then, of course, the articles go on to talk about California and then Seattle, which is sort of the test case of people looking at what's going to happen out in certain portions where it went to $15. The District of Columbia is $9.50.
Right.
So I think it'll be some decent news. It's not going to be the most in the world, but there will be at least 21 states that will do that hike tonight at midnight.
And that's going to produce an economic boom, I believe. Not necessarily a massive one, because these are relatively modest increases. But you put more money in the pockets of people who spend 100% of the money they get, which is the bottom half of the income ladder, people who are working for the minimum wage. You put more money in their pocket, they spend it, and when they spend it, they stimulate the economy.
And the government will take its share off of that too, with Social Security and
sure
and whatnot. But
yep,
it'll be some money back into their.
It'll help tax revenues as well.
Will.
Right.
And another story that I'm following, and I'm not going to speculate on it, but I just think it's fascinating because the security firm called NORSE, N-O-R-S-C, has point blank said that they have new information. They have turned over raw data to the FBI on the Sony case, on the Sony issue. And they said they turned it over on Tuesday. And they also met with the FBI. This is the company, a security company called NORSE.
Were they hired by Sony?
No. They were not hired by Sony.
So they're just doing this for the publicity of it or for the good deed of it or both?
For the something of it or
yeah,
both. And because they are arguing that Sony... It's an inside deal in Sony of disgruntled workers, and they said that they have the raw data and the keys to prove it. So, yeah, they're not connected to Sony. In fact, I think Sony would hope that they just wouldn't say much at all. And I don't know what's true on it, but the FBI did meet with them. Now, the FBI stands by their story.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was very interesting.
Did you see that story? I think it's in The Guardian about how there's a South Korean activist who is buying up DVDs of the interview, the movie, you know, and he's going to attach them to helium balloons and let them go so that they float over North Korea so that people can watch them because people don't watch. They're not hooked up to the Internet, but there's a lot of DVD players in North Korea.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Maybe they put some over towards China. China just recently clamped down on more of its Internet.
Oh my.
Activity, you know, on people.
Yeah.
I did want to mention, you had mentioned the underreported stories, and we have some predictions, talk radio news service for next year, and I did want to mention that because Ellen Ratner has put it together. It's available on our website.
Okay, talkradionews.com.
Yes, talkradionews.com. And Ellen is predicting the Republican Congress will have a lot of infighting, and it will give the Democrats an opening in the congressional races in 2016. And she also predicts some type of life in the universe will be found, even if it's only bacteria. So I wanted to make sure I got Ellen's predictions in there. And,
I absolutely agree with that. They've just found methane on the surface of Mars, and pretty much the only thing that produces methane is life.
Life. So you know, she threw that prediction in there. Will McDonald of Talk Radio News did predict that Obamacare enrollment will hit close to 14 million by the end of 2015. There'll be a higher approval rating of the Affordable Care Act period, and nearly every single state will expand their Medicaid option as far as the act goes. I
agree. That's all I'm saying.
And I think it will. I think it's going to get much better. Some of the political people are starting to, you know, the neocon side, of course, are starting to get away from it anyway, Tom, as you can see. They're on to new things like Iran and Cuba and et cetera.
Right.
So they're kind of getting off that. And then they're trying immigration, too, of course, which they'll focus on next year from the Republican side. I did predict that the president will have a win on Iran. That was my prediction. And will continue to reestablish relationships. Victoria Jones predicted that every single Republican presidential contender will release a book in 2015.
That's a safe one.
I wanted to mention that would be out there.
Is Rand Paul's going to be titled My Adventures with Aqua Buddha?
It might be. You just never know. It's going to be interesting to watch. You know, the Republican senators every morning they look in the mirror and they see the next president of the United States.
Right.
So you know, you've got Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Rubio, which I think all three of them are going to potentially vie for it. I don't think Jeb Bush will actually even be in the running by the time the shouting's done.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm guessing really he's going to be the nominee, but either him or Romney. But I could be very, very wrong. I'm curious your take, as a former member of Congress and an astute political advisor, on Eric Bowler over at Media Matters' observation that Bernie Sanders is about in the same place in the polls as a potential Democrat for president as Marco Rubio is as a potential Republican for president. They're virtually identical in terms of polling. And yet the media, Marco Rubio says anything. He farts loudly, and it's national news, right? Mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders holds press conferences, sends out news releases, says all kinds of really extraordinary things, and none of it gets covered. What's the deal?
Well, Bernie is a thinker. I served with Bernie. I co-authored several bills with Bernie. He's absolutely one of the brightest minds that exists. He's a fair guy, and he's out there, and that's probably part of his problem with, the right-wing centered media. They're just not going to pay attention to him, period. And they're fostering this whole Rubio thing. When you see him all over the place, he's being promoted. And it's not that he has such a good PR firm or anything, but it's just, I think, it's just a bias towards Rubio.
Yeah, or towards Republicans.
It's just a bias.
Yeah. Bob Ney, Congressman, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
Check out Bob's book, Sideswiped, by the way. Thank you, Bob.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, and I'm very pleased to have with us Dr. Stephanie Seneff, a senior research scientist at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Their website, of course, web.mit.edu. Dr. Seneff, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I read this remarkable story, and I wanted to reality check it with you, about your asserting that as a consequence of glyphosate, correct my pronunciation if I have it wrong, the chemical that is sold.
Glyphosate, yes.
How do you say it?
Glyphosate. Everyone has trouble with it.
Glyphosate. Okay.
Glyphosate. Yeah.
Thank you. Which is sold under the brand name Roundup, I believe.
Yes. Right.
That as a consequence of the widespread use of this, that we could see half of all kids born in 2025 being autistic. Is that?
That's what I said. And now, you know, it could be an exaggeration, but even if it's just a quarter, it's still a huge problem, right? And when you project the curve that the CDC has been maintaining out to 2037, which is 12-year-olds today. So 12-year-olds today, currently 1 in 68, formerly 1 in 88, formerly 1 in 150. You project the curve, that's what you see. So, and I don't see anything changing. I mean, everything's getting worse every year, both the glyphosate usage and synergistic effects of vaccines. There are many chemicals in vaccines that are synergistically toxic with glyphosate.
Huh.
We're getting more vaccines on the agenda. We're getting more herbicides. You know, they're adding 2,4-D. Now they've got 2,4-D resistance on top of glyphosate resistance because we've got these runaway weeds. I mean, the agriculture is out of control in this country. We think chemical treatment, basically putting poisons on our crops, is the only way we can grow food. And for as long as we think that's the case, I think we're in serious trouble.
Now, the argument that Monsanto makes, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not the expert on this, you are, but I believe that the argument that Monsanto makes about the safety of glyphosate of Roundup is that it interrupts a metabolic pathway that is unique to plants and that is not it's not part of the human metabolism.
Is that
true? Is that what they say?
Well, first of all, it's not unique to plants. It's unique to everybody, basically, except the mammals, because it's unique to both plants and microbes, which is very important because we don't have the pathway. It's called the shikimate pathway in our cells. For that reason, we can't produce the product of the pathway. And the product of the pathway is incredibly important to our health, which is all the aromatic amino acids. They are precursors to things like serotonin, melatonin, melanin, various vitamins, and all kinds of things. So
right.
We depend on our gut bacteria and on the plant supply to supply these nutrients for us. If they can't supply them, we're going to be deficient, and if we're deficient, we're going to be sick. So that's one thing. But more than that, it doesn't just disrupt that one pathway. They like to claim that it does, but the research has shown otherwise. And in particular, it also disrupts a class of enzymes called cytochrome P450 enzymes in the plants, in the microbes, and in the liver. This has been shown in experiments in all three of those classes of life. And so those enzymes are incredibly important. In the liver in particular, they detoxify all the other toxic chemicals in the environment. So when they're not working, everything becomes more toxic. And this is crucial because we're exposed to so many chemicals these days. And when you add glyphosate to the mix, even Tylenol can become toxic.
Yeah. Well,
can become toxic.
Yeah, a lot of people die from Tylenol destroying their livers. I mean, that's a major
right.
problem.
And that's part of it because glyphosate is making it easy for Tylenol to do that.
Really?
Yes.
Whoa. Because it interrupts one of the enzymes that
yes. detoxifies Tylenol, yes.
Right.
It's very crucial. And, of course, it also then messes up the entire sulfate system. Sulfate is incredibly important for the health of the blood. Blood flow, the vascular health of the walls of the blood vessels, they're very disturbed by a lack of sulfate. And glyphosate disrupts the whole sulfate system. For example, the CYP enzymes are necessary for vitamin D activation in the liver. We face a vitamin D epidemic today. Everyone says, oh, yeah, you've got to take vitamin D supplements. That's the only way you're going to get enough. Everybody has deficiency. No one seems to be asking the question, why do we suddenly all have this deficiency in vitamin D? It's because of glyphosate. It disrupts the activation of vitamin D in the liver, which depends upon a CYP enzyme.
Whoa. So,
and it can explain also celiac disease. You know, all of a sudden everybody's allergic to wheat, and we're like, oh, yeah, wheat's toxic, you know. Of course, didn't you know that? Well, we didn't think that a few years back.
Right.
Now you've got all these, you know, sections in the grocery store of all this gluten-free food.
Right.
It's just come about overnight.
And that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that that tracks back a decade or maybe a decade and a half ago to they never used to use Roundup on wheat, and they started using it on wheat 3 days before the wheat is harvested so that the plants would turn brown and be crunchy and more easily harvested. It doesn't gum up the machines like green, you know, living plants do. So they kill them off with the glyphosate, the Roundup, and they have a more efficient harvest, but now the wheat is contaminated with Roundup too.
Right.
Is that how it works?
Of course, it also gets a head start on next year's weeds. You know, they really like to advertise you can kill the weeds at the same time as you kill the crop.
Right.
So it seems like a great idea. And of course, if glyphosate's non-toxic, then sure, why not? But you're going to dump it right into the seed, and so wheat all of a sudden becomes toxic, and nobody seems to think it might be the glyphosate that's doing it, although it seems obvious to me.
Wow.
We've written a paper on that, by the way. Anthony Samsel and I have collaborated on a couple of papers that are sort of the background for this, for my position on this subject.
Glyphosate
is a fascinating molecule.
It is.
It is an absolute train wreck to biology.
Some of the compounds that you mentioned, serotonin, melatonin, these are essentially hormone neurotransmitters, modulators of both the immune system and the emotional system. Is this the mechanism by which kids are being damaged to the point that they end up autistic?
I think so. I think it plays a major role, the serotonin, the melatonin. Melatonin is crucial for delivering sulfate to the brain, and that's another article that I've written, which is about to be published. I have another article I've already published on that subject, but I've got a new one coming.
Uh-huh.
I have identified sulfate deficiency in the cerebral spinal fluid in the brain as a key factor in autism. It disrupts the ability to generate new neurons, neurogenerative procedure depends upon the sulfates, and that's because the melatonin is unavailable. The melatonin is a product, of course, of the shikimate pathway. It's also because sulfate is disrupted. Sulfate synthesis, sulfate transport, sulfate waste are all problematic, you know, with glyphosate. Glyphosate really disturbs the sulfate system.
And the shikimate pathway is the pathway that glyphosate, that Roundup specifically interrupts. Have you, we have about a minute and a half left here, we're talking with Dr. Stephanie Seneff. Have you gotten any blowback from Monsanto on this? Are they in the warpath?
Well, they are. I mean, they certainly are trying to make sure that people believe that I'm not credible. I have an undergraduate degree in biology from MIT. I won an award as a sophomore, as the sophomore most likely to succeed in the field of chemistry from the American Chemical Society. So, I mean, I know biology. I know chemistry.
Yeah.
My PhD is in electrical engineering and computer science. And actually, the electrical engineering is important, too, because it allows me to figure out electricity in the body, which is extremely critical part of what's messed up in the biology.
Yeah, these are neural pathways that are screwed up in autism.
It's electricity. And then my thesis was on a model for auditory processing of speech in the brain. So I know a lot about, you know, how the brain processes. I know a lot about neuroelectricity, this kind of thing.
So what should we do? Should we just don't eat anything that doesn't say organic?
I absolutely think we should ban it. Well, everyone individually should buy only organic food. That's what we do.
Right.
Luckily, it's available and it's growing, and I'm very, very enthusiastic about that. I love, anytime I meet someone who's an organic farmer, I just want to hug them. They're so special.
Yeah. Yeah, but then in general, we need to ban Roundup, is your suggestion.
It needs to be banned because it's not just destroying our health. It's destroying the soil health. It's actually a major contributor to global warming, in my opinion. I'm working on that right now.
Because it's preventing carbon reabsorption by microbes and things?
It messes up the microbes, it messes up the soil, it messes up the water. I mean, it messes up everything. And, of course, it's everywhere, too, when people aren't testing it enough. I mean, the U.S. government is extremely negligent.
It's amazing.
In the testing of the food.
At some point in the next month or so, I'd like to have a longer conversation with you about this. Thanks so much for coming on our program, Dr. Senna.
Thank you. I'm delighted.
Great talking with you. This is amazing stuff. Dr. Stephanie Senna of MIT.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. Back to your suggestions for most underreported news story of the year. I think you might have just heard one of them. We'll be right back. And welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour and the last hour of the Tom Hartman Program for 2014. Right? Yes. Yeah. Last 45 minutes, in fact. Tomorrow's the first. Anita in San Antonio, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Anita, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Happy New Year.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you. I think the most underreported story is how wrong Republicans have been about everything.
Ha!
They were wrong.
You're right.
They were wrong about... I'm sorry?
You're right.
Yeah, they were wrong from the very beginning. Well, I think they've been wrong for decades, but they were wrong about the stimulus. The stimulus was going to destroy the economy and kill jobs.
Right.
Of course, and then the Affordable Care Act, premiums were going to skyrocket. They were going to, once again, it was going to kill jobs. That didn't happen. We don't hear about that. They said if we repealed the Bush tax cuts, that was going to be another job killer. I just can't think of anything they've been right about.
Yeah, that's a good point. Going all the way back to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
It's like I can't think of anything that Republicans have been right about either. The stupid wars, the list is rather lengthy. Good one, Anita. Thank you very much, and a happy New Year to you and yours.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Whoops. Sorry about that. I pushed the button a little too fast. John in Staunton. Staunton, Virginia?
It's Stanton.
Stanton.
You were silent.
Okay. Hey, John.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for watching Free Speech.
And being the best show on television, I may add.
Well,
bless
you.
What the hell did I do before Free Speech and shows like yours? Well, I watched that crummy stuff on Sunday mornings like Meet the Press, Face the Nation. Well, I got wise thanks to you, and I no longer listen to those shows.
Yeah.
And I think I owe a lot of that to you. And
thank you.
Secondly, I hope your wife is feeling better from the flu.
She is. Yeah, I think she's on the backside of it. I think she's recovering.
I read the other day, Tom, that this year the vaccine has been about 50% effective, where usually it's about 80% effective.
I read that, too. And Louise and I both got flu shots, and she got it, and I didn't. Knock wood, right? I mean, who knows? But I think that we got it flying through airports. You know, we went to Portland for Christmas.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't the flu kill like 20-some thousand people a year in this country?
It's in the 30s, actually. Yeah,
it's that much.
Yeah, it's huge. It kills mostly people who are, you know, already on the edge, people who have, AIDS, people who are elderly, and very young. But it kills a lot of people. Yeah.
I tell my friends, if you want to reach me on Fridays at noon, I will not pick up the phone. I will not go to relatives' funerals.
Yeah.
I'm going to be listening to you and your guests.
Well, thank you, John. John, we just have 20 seconds left. You had a nominee for the underreported story?
Well, I don't know if it's underreported. You touched on it. And is this woman, 29 years old, why in the hell do you need to take a loaded handgun to go shopping at Walmart? I would like for someone to tell me that.
Well, beyond that, I'd like to know why in the hell her husband thought that it was appropriate to give her a loaded gun for Christmas and apparently encourage her to carry it in her purse with her two-year-old. I mean, that's really sad. I mean, the whole thing is tragic. The whole thing is just, it's another example of the stupidity of our gun culture. John, thank you for your kind words, and Happy New Year to you and yours.
Tom, bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be right back 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Brian in Chicago. Hey, Brian, you wanted to talk about the Supreme Court?
Yes. Hi, Tom. I listen all the time, so I've heard you talk about your issues with the
Supreme Court on numerous occasions. So I've always been curious. And actually, I have another question about Russia, too, after this. But I've always been curious about how, since you oppose sort of the oversight role of the
Supreme Court. It's called judicial supremacy, yes.
Right. How is it that do you feel that then the minorities that have been able to benefit from those judicial decisions that have worked in our favor, and I happen to be an African-American and a gay person as well, that minorities should then be forced to wait and potentially suffer until some majority somewhere in legislatures around the country come to their collective, have their collective come to Jesus moment and decide, oh, then that they've been making a mistake all along, that they should grant people the civil rights that they deserve are enshrined in the Constitution.
Brian, you're looking at half the equation. If you're thinking of Brown v. Board in 1954, when the Supreme Court ended legal apartheid in the United States, the other half of that equation is that in 1898, it wasn't Dred Scott. What was the decision? Plessy versus Ferguson. It was the Supreme Court that established legal apartheid in the United States in the first place. It was not in law anywhere in any state in the United States. And the Supreme Court established that as law, essentially, using both judicial supremacy and judicial review. And so you wouldn't have needed Brown v. Board in 54 if you hadn't had Plessy in 1898. And so
what about Loving versus Virginia, or the elimination of, say, the anti-sodomy laws, which still remain on the books in several states in the country.
Right. I don't disagree that there have been good things done by the Supreme Court, and Loving is a great example. Another one is the one in Connecticut. I always want to call it Cunningham. I forget the Griswold. The one that legalized birth control. This and Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court, typically, though, is more retrograde than forward grade, as it were. I mean, if you look at the damage that the Supreme Court did with Buckley versus Vallejo, you look at the damage that they did with Citizens United, you look at the damage that they did with Plessy v. Ferguson, you look at the damage. You know, the second time from 1787, when we became an independent republic, and when the Constitution was ratified by the last state, or 1789, excuse me, from that point until 1857, the Supreme Court had only used judicial review and judicial supremacy once, and that was in a relatively obscure case, Marbury versus Madison in 1803. Thomas Jefferson went nuts about it, but the consequences of it were fairly minimal. The second time the Supreme Court used this doctrine was Dred Scott, and Dred Scott gave us the Civil War. I mean, this is where Roger Taney, who was the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, said, I'm going to settle this whole debate, the Missouri Compromise and all this stuff, all these, you know, the Western territories, whether the United States can have slave states or not, whether slavery is legal or not anywhere in the country. He said, I'm going to settle the whole problem by simply saying, yes, people who are of African ancestry are not human beings for the purposes of the Constitution. I mean, in fact, I just read Dred Scott 2 weeks ago. I'm writing a book right now in the Supreme Court, and I just read the entire decision 2 weekends ago, and it is astonishing. It is shocking. So, Brian, I would say that if you identify a few good things that the Supreme Court has done, the damage they've done outweighs that, first of all. And secondly, I believe that because the Supreme Court has been taking this activist role all these years, and in particular since the 1880s, that's when they really started doing this a lot. And then it went on, it was like none of their decisions up until 1857. And then it was maybe 5% of their decisions up until the 1920s. And then it became maybe 30% of their decisions. And now it's more than like 90% of their decisions, basically since the 1970s. And I would argue that because they are doing so much of this, legislators and citizens are not engaging in the activism that we used to. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I can understand what you're saying on that, but I also feel like it comes from a position of privilege where, on some level, you know, all of our rights were subjected to this, but,
right.
Historically, some people's rights have been, you know,
restricted more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And that, especially these days, we've seen this with a lot of the gay marriage questions, which have in most states were resolved by courts and not through legislatures.
Right.
That if you have a situation where the legislature is not going to fix it, it's not going to act in the interest of freedom and equality, that the governmental agency of last resort has been the court.
Right.
And it seems kind of unfair, and in some ways, like I said, it comes from a place of privilege.
But if you – no, I understand. Well, and as a white male, I'm you know, I'm not suffering under oppression, and historically I and my ancestors have not, in ways that the Supreme Court has stepped in and fixed, nor has the Supreme Court added to my oppression, let me add.
Right.
But my point is, if you go back to the 19-teens, my point is, if you go back to the 19-teens and look at the women's suffrage movement, women got the right to vote, not because the Supreme Court gave it to them, but because they took it. And I would argue, and this was at the very beginning of the modern era of Supreme Court activism, which happened mostly in the 1930s against Franklin Roosevelt, but some of it in the 19-teens against Teddy Roosevelt. And that if people had just been waiting, or if the courts had involved themselves in that process, I don't think it would have worked out as well, and I don't think it would have happened. I think that the court being like this actually diminishes activism, both in the content, the amount of it, and in the effectiveness of it. And that's my argument, Brian. I absolutely understand your argument, and it has tremendous credibility. Erwin Chermansky has just written a book called The Case Against the Supreme Court that's really worth reading. Brian, we'll have to continue the conversation another time. We're out of time. Thank you so much for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
That's a story that we're not reporting on at all in the United States, is the role of the Supreme Court versus what the Constitution says the role of the Supreme Court is. Just a few quick news stories for you. Protesters in Ferguson, Missouri have gone to the St. Louis Police Headquarters and to hold a sit-in protest. They were there for 4.5 hours, and then they were maced and cuffed. The story is over at thegatewaypundit.com, although I'm guessing it's all over other places as well. There's a lot of pictures. People are tweeting this stuff out of these guys and their demands. And the demands of the protesters are interesting and rational. They're asking for an immediate meeting with a few of the political leaders there, firing of a couple of police officers by name, a clear and transparent protocol when a person dies in police custody, including immediate medical attention for the victims, immediate release of the officer's name, and the appointment of a special prosecutor for all deaths that occur in police custody, a whistleblower program that protects officers acting with integrity, amnesty for protesters who have been charged with nonviolent offenses, including those who have been charged arbitrarily with third-degree assault with no actual violence, creation of a diverse citizen review board with subpoena power. The board would be appointed by the community, not politicians, and would be a reflection of victims most subjected to police violence. Number 7, a 7-day release of all information regarding police shootings, including transparent release of unedited videos and audios. Number 8, a substantive plan with implementation dates for mandatory diversity training. Number 9, restoration of the residency requirement. Number 10, screening that prevents officers fired from other departments being hired by St. Louis Police Department. And number 11, the implementation of a youth summer program that creates opportunities for young people to serve in the community. It's a very, very rational list of demands. Remarkable. We'll see where this goes. We'll keep you up to date on this. So that's happening, number one. Number two, Palestine wanted to be recognized as an independent country by the United Nations. And the UN Security Council said no, because any one country or two countries can veto a proposal. Actually, though, at the larger scale, apparently John Kerry called Goodluck Jonathan, the president of Nigeria, and asked him to vote against it. It's been reported over at The Guardian, The New York Times reporting that the United States and Australia and the Security Council voted no. So no on Palestinian statehood. So now the Palestinians are trying to join the International Criminal Court at The Hague. And if they're granted status there, that would give them arguably or presumably the right to bring charges against against war criminal crimes against humanity, against Israel, at the Hague. And Mahmoud Abbas, president of the Palestinian Authority, has signed the papers to do that. 16 other, along with 16 other organizations, provided for by the United Nations. A move that Jody Rorden, writing in the New York Times, says could bring harsh sanctions from the U.S. and Israel. Yikes. So, anyhow, that's what's up in the news. Back to your phone calls. Jared in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Jared, underreported story?
Yeah, I think an underreported story. First, Happy New Year. An underreported story is that nuclear fission produces toxic waste. We don't seem to connect the two.
Right.
And this bothers me a great deal. Here in Vermont, we had a power plant in 72. Watergate was your story, and our story was Vermont Yankee.
Right.
They went online in 72. They got shut down 42 years ago. I mean, after 42 years, they got shut down.
Last week. This week.
But at the same time, we continue to build more power plants.
Yeah, there's two of them being built down in Georgia and Carolina, in South Carolina, aren't they?
And to this time, there's no waste disposal system except building, what do they call it, the canisters?
Yeah, the open-air casks, disposal sites. Well, there is one guy, his name is Art Robinson. The website is whoisartrobinson.com. And Art Robinson is the head of the Republican Party in Oregon, I believe. He may not be right now, but he was a while ago. And he has run against Congressman Peter DeFazio several times and will probably do so again in 2 years, just ran against him this last time. And Art Robinson, in addition to some other idiosyncratic views, for example, he says that public schools are tyranny and he wants to close them all, and he has homeschooled his own kids. He's a science teacher from school and, some other kind of right-wing crackpot things. But one of the things that Art Robinson says is that low levels of radiation are actually good for you, and we should recycle our radioactive waste into insulating material for our homes so that we are all continuously exposed to low-level radiation, because that will help our immune system somehow magically. I'm not making this up.
He is.
Well, he says he's not making it up. He's been pitching this for years, and it's amazing. I mean, if you've never heard Peter DeFazio tell the story on the air, it's just astonishing. This guy.
Well, he should talk to a dermatologist.
Yeah, or anybody who, John Goffman. He should read some of his old writings. Jared, I agree with you. The Vermont Yankee. In fact, the Vermont Yankee decommissioning starting this week is a huge national story that only got reported basically in Vermont and on my program. I didn't see it anywhere else, and it should be a national news story. And the fact that the whole state of Vermont is literally throwing parties should have been a national news story.
But some way there's no connection or very little connection between nuke power and nuke waste.
Right.
For instance, all Navy capital ships. And I think all Navy submarines are nuke power.
Right.
What do they do with their waste?
Yeah, I honestly don't know, but we don't have a good system in the United States or anywhere in the world, I believe, for reprocessing or storing forever in a safe way nuclear waste. Even the French who keep reprocessing and burning it down to the point where it's fairly low level, it's still radioactive waste. And they're dumping it mostly in Pacific Islands.
And I think the French are rethinking their...
There's a big debate going on in France. Yeah, after Germany decided, no nukes at all. They're going to shut down all their nuclear power plants and go entirely solar and wind and they're halfway there.
My wife is Swiss, and so I get a lot of the European news.
Yeah.
And apparently the French really are strongly rethinking, and I think they're thinking of going the route that Germany has.
Yeah. It just makes sense. It just makes sense. Jared, I got to move along. I got a bunch of callers here, and we just have 20 minutes left for the show. So thank you for your call. I am with you. I think it's a solid suggestion. Steve in Portland, Oregon, listening on X-Ray FM. Hey, Steve, you're underreported story nominee.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for a great show. And my underreported story is that Christmas is a war on the environment. And let me connect the dots, because I don't think anyone's connecting them yet, is that we get told every day on the business news that 2/3 of consumer spending, two-thirds of our economy is consumer spending.
Right.
And then you talk to the retailers, and they'll say up to 70% of their money comes from the Christmas season, from the retailers. So, you know, it's like all our Christmas lights are being fueled by coal, and there's a genocide with Christmas trees out here in Oregon. You know, there's a couple of counties that their number one crop and ag crop is Christmas trees. And so if you talk bad about Christmas, you get cut off. A couple of years ago, the other community radio station here in Portland just totally cut me off. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
I think that your 70% of all businesses done at Christmas time statistic is off. It's a huge bulge, and it's the bulge that pushes most retail businesses over the top, theoretically and maybe apocryphally, thus the phrase Black Friday. But I agree with you that an orgy of consumerism is both biologically, both environmentally, culturally, spiritually, not a good thing for us. And frankly, I would argue that now that we don't make things in the United States anymore, so most of the money that is being spent on Christmas presents is ending up in China or places like China, that it's not even good economic policy. So I don't disagree with you, Steve.
Right. And they just think if you talk anything bad about Christmas, you're labeled an un-American or a communist.
Oh, I don't think so. I think there's a large cohort of people, particularly among Christians, who believe that Christmas has become wildly over-commercialized and that it should once again become a spiritual holiday or turn it back into a pagan holiday, you know, turn it back into the winter solstice celebration. But, you know, you can do that. You don't have to go out and buy a whole bunch of stuff. You can just get together with friends and have a nice meal. You know, there's a lot of ways to do Christmas other than that. In fact, in our family, up until this year, we've always bought gifts for everybody. And we agreed this year when we all got together that we're going to just draw names next year. So every person is just giving one gift to one person, period. And so we're going to radically downscale the amount of junk that ends up in my daughter's living room after Christmas. Steve, thanks for the call. I think you're onto something. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The last 15 minutes coming up of the Tom Hartman program for 2014, is it? Is that this year? Yeah, it is. Okay. Oop. I am so bad with time. I'm going to be, you know, I don't write checks anymore. I think it's, you know, a lot of us are, you know, use credit cards or electronic banking or whatever, but I always used to, my entire life, the first 3 months of the new year, I was using the last year's number on checks, and checks used to, you know, the banks used to just kind of let you get away with it. And then they got real rigid about it maybe a decade or so ago, and that caused me no shortage of problems. Anyway, say what? It'll happen when we read the news. Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Back to your calls. John in Cayucos, California. Hey, John, thanks for watching Free Speech.
Hey, Tom, Happy New Year. How are you?
Thanks. Happy New Year to you. I'm great. Hope you're well.
Hey, I have a little bit of disheartening news, a little bit off topic, but I was reading somewhere how MSNBC was going to change their format for the new year. And if there's any indication of what happened last night, I'm afraid they're going to go the same way as Allison London Grimes and Mary Landrieu did.
You're talking about Michael Steele filling in for Chris Matthews?
Yes.
I think that was perverted. I'm sorry?
I think it was perverted to do that. It's disgusting.
It's something you should take up with MSNBC. I didn't see the show, so I really can't comment on it. And it may well be that, you know, Michael Steele is smarter and less ideological than we think. But he, you know, we saw the same thing with Joe Scarborough. You know, he's a hardcore right wing crank who puts on this persona of a reasonable guy, but always manages to get the hardcore right wing crank memes in there in a friendly way. And I would guess that Michael Steele does the same thing. But I really, not having seen the show last night, I can't speak to it. I have not heard any rumors about MSNBC changing format. I do know that they are struggling in the ratings, but what the cause of that might be, I'm very reluctant to speculate. I'm not a close observer of that particular media scene. John, thanks for the call, and a happy new year to you. Norma, watching Free Speech TV in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Happy New Year. Thanks for taking me. One thing I never hear anybody discuss is the Article 6 oath that our representatives take. The only oath they take is to support the Constitution.
Support and defend.
There's no oath where they have to work for the country or work for the people or the welfare of the country and welfare the people. They do not have to work with integrity or in an ethical manner. They're supposed to be handling the business of the country, but they only handle the business of the corporations.
I agree with your conclusion. I would I would suggest that the oath that they take to defend and support the Constitution, the preamble to the Constitution makes it very clear that the first three words are "We the People." That the Constitution's all about we the people. Makes it very clear that one of the six explicit reasons why the Constitution was put into place was to provide for the general welfare, which, as Alexander Hamilton pointed out in his report on manufacturers, was written very broadly so that future Congresses could do things. But it would be nice if they had some sort of Boy Scout oath, They're certainly not behaving well. Norma, thank you for the call. Good point. Excellent point. We'll be back. Thanks so much to our show director, Louise Harmon, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the folks at the various companies that syndicate this program, Westwood One on commercial radio, Pacifica Radio and non-commercial radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Free Speech TV, the cable radio network, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, Direct TV, all the cable providers who carry our show, all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to Netroots Radio, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for our tech support, and to our affiliates, our sponsors, and especially to you. Thanks so much for supporting our program, our underwriters, our affiliates, letting them know that you care. Thank you. Catherine in Monterey, California. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Well, Happy New Year, Tom.
Happy New Year.
Here in Monterey Bay, you know, we had a problem with the sardines being overfished that you mentioned earlier in the program.
Yeah, back in the 1920s, wasn't it?
Well, it was a going concern in the 20s. And through the 40s, probably by 1950, they had to call an end to the sardine fishery.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I just read Cannery Row, John Steinbeck's book. That's pretty much all I know about it.
Okay. Well, it took until 2005 for the sardines to come back.
They are coming back?
Yeah, they – well, it's a combination of the number of fish increasing, and then their migratory patterns. If the weather gets warmer and the oceans here are warmer, then they come into the bay.
I see.
So by 2005, they had increased in numbers enough that they could go out and fish them again.
Huh. Well, that's interesting.
So it takes, yeah.
Well, thank you, Catherine, for that.
It took a long time for that to happen, you know. So I'm
yeah.
just saying, you know, like we were talking about overfishing of the various types of food fish.
Yeah, and that's like a 70-year recovery time for yeah. sardines, and they're not fully recovered. Catherine, thank you for the call, and thanks for the update on that. I appreciate it.
I have a nominee.
Okay, what's that?
A year ago, we heard every newscast at the top of the hour on radio that the Affordable Care Act was going to be a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, we didn't hear that it was a success.
Right.
It was underreported in the news.
Yeah, I agree. The successes of the Affordable Care Act are one of the underreported stories and one of the malreported stories on right-wing media and hate radio. Absolutely right. Catherine,
thank you for your wonderful show, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Catherine, for listening. And I truly appreciate it. Kurt in Los Angeles. Hey, Kurt, you have a nominee?
A nominee? No. Oh, yeah, for the most underreported story
yep.
for the year?
Yeah.
Yeah, my most underreported story is the Alec Corporation and the big businesses and billionaires that sponsor them. And the Republican Party that bows down to them.
You know, and when I had an earlier caller say the Bilderbergers run the world, and I said, I don't think so.
Bilderberg.
Yeah, there was somebody, I don't know if it was in one of the tweet comments or if it was in our chat room. I've been bouncing back and forth between the two of them. But somebody said, Tom, you should have pointed out that if you want to know the secret government behind the government, the people who are writing the laws,
yes.
It's Alec. And
right.
It's like, yeah,
and
duh.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, let me get to it before we end the air.
Sure.
Before we end the show. Forget the Bilderbergs. Alec is destroying our company, our country.
Yes.
Every single thing that you talk about all year long, everything bad that's going on in America can be attacked, can be connected to Alec within 3 degrees, just like Kevin Bacon in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You can connect Alec with almost everything that's gone bad. Extinction of animals you talked about earlier today, Alec. Okay, the fertilizer that's killing babies, that can be connected to Monsanto, which is an Alec sponsored company. Okay, and so as part of my New Year's resolution, Tom, is today the UPS store, because they are Alec affiliated company, and they're charging little old ladies $50 to wrap an unwrapped gift and send it across town because they got arthritis and can't wrap their own boxes. I mean, they're just ripping people off left and right, and then they're going to fire pregnant women when they can't lift more than 20 pounds.
Right.
I mean, it's a ridiculous company. So I'm doing all my shopping for United States Postal Service. I'm also dropping Verizon. I'm also dropping Time Warner Cable, okay, because $30 – 10 years ago, you get every channel that existed for $30. Now you barely get like 4 network channels and the shopping network.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous.
And the price is a whole lot higher. I'm with you. Kurt, thank you. Excellent list. Excellent list. Frank in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Frank, underreported stories. Thanks for listening to 880 AM.
Thank you for having it. Okay, so, you know, to me, the biggest the story that isn't reported, how a large amount of our federal budget goes towards the military-industrial complex. But the problem that we just see it going to it, but the problem that we really should be looking at is that it's actually like a welfare program, because that money that actually goes to it, it goes to individual people that profit, that take the profit off of the poor people that actually go and fight these wars.
Oh, yeah.
It goes to just individual families. Yeah, that's
these defense contractors, they're mansions.
They're a profit machine for people.
Yeah, they're mansions surround this city.
Yeah, okay. Then the other part of it is that we've given our tax dollars, and people need to speak out about this. We've given $135 billion so far that I know. I'm sure we have given more than that to the Israelis to occupy the Palestinian people. They shoot at least 2 of them a week.
Yeah, I can't verify the number, but I think that our foreign aid to Israel is $3 billion a year, and to Egypt is the same. But you know, I get your point, Frank. Thanks a lot for the call. All of us here at the Tom Hartman Program want to wish you a safe and happy new year. Thanks for hanging out with us in 2014. We'll see you next year. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It begins with you. And we're coming up on a really interesting year. So tag, you're it. Get out there, get active, and occupy something. We'll see you tomorrow. Or we'll see you, actually, we'll see you next year.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.